Then you were appointed, were you not?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Well, we thank you for your efforts. Fine. Our last case for argument is United States versus Blackburn, Mr. Beavers.
May it please the court. Doug Beavers from the Federal Public Defender's Office for the Central District of Illinois, representing John Blackburn. In this case, we have a big issue as to whether federal law has two different definitions of reasonableness, one for regular sentencings and one for revocations of supervised release. And although it's the same word, it is true that prior to the Supreme Court's Booker decision, there were, in effect, two very different standards of reasonableness. There was the standard for upward departures. At least in the Seventh Circuit, the two standards were very different. As this court said in Leahy and Cross, the reasonableness was defined as to for upward departures would be dependent on whether the upward departure was linked to the structure of the guidelines and in essentially couldn't exceed the binding guidelines for more serious conduct. In contrast, for revocations, in the McClanahan case, this court described the Chapter 7 revocation guidelines as entitled to great weight but not binding, even in the context where it was above the guidelines. And I think the concern here is that after the Supreme Court's Booker case, it's clear that the Supreme Court is directing that one standard of review apply to both types of cases. The Supreme Court specifically relied on this court's Salinas decision as defining what the new reasonableness standard of review was going to look like for regular guideline cases.
What do you think is unreasonable about this action, this sentence?
Your Honor, I think the what's unreasonable about this case is that it was so far above the guideline, above the revocation guidelines, without anything that makes it unusual. It's basically a heartland case. Someone with a drug addiction who gives into the temptation to use drugs while on supervised release. Judge Mills did say that the defendant was an addict. It wasn't just someone who didn't care. It was someone who actually had a strong addiction and gave into it. And
didn't he make it pretty clear in this case that he kind of wanted to help this rather tragic person, and he believed that, you know, this sentence would keep him away from drugs for 30 months. I mean, he considered the nature, the circumstances of the offense. He considered the defendant's history as a drug addict. He considered the fact that he's got ethics and, you know, but it's all, you know, it's the drugs and the alcohol here. And he wanted him to get a handle on the problem, and he thought that the best way to get a handle on the problem was to be away from drugs and alcohol.
And my concern is that may be true, but the problem is, how is that in any way different than the heartland of what the Sentencing Commission, as directed by Congress, established as the guidelines for this exact kind of offense, just using drugs?
Now you're sort of arguing the opposite of Mr. Anderson, right? I mean, now you're saying the guidelines are it, right? All that heartland stuff was before Booker. So now if the judge, you know, appealing to the very vague factors in 3553A wants to give an out-of-guideline sentence, he can.
Yes, Your Honor, but I believe that under the new reasonableness standard that would apply to regular cases, a judge would need to provide some reason for going outside the guidelines.
He gave reasons. He may not like them. He did give reasons.
But those reasons would be indistinguishable from every other person who uses drugs while on supervised release. It would make that the person has a drug problem and one needs to deal with it.
He talked about this person and this person's problems and history. It wasn't a sort of global you drug users. He really seems to have studied Mr. Blackburn.
He did focus on Mr. Blackburn, but I don't see how anything he said explained why this sentence would be different than the type of case that should be within the policy statement. I believe he just disagreed with the policy statement and refused to follow it for no... I think that's what the record shows. He didn't follow it for no understandable reason why.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Beavers. Mr. Gilmore?
Thank you. May it please the Court. Greg Gilmore for the United States. Your Honors, Judge Mills was dealing with a 47-year-old defendant who had a problem with drugs going back to the time he was 16 years old, 1974. In 1988, this defendant had his first federal conviction. He was convicted of distributing cocaine. He was sentenced to 15 months by Judge Mills. After he served his 15 months in BOP, he was released on supervised release, and he was revoked for using cocaine, missing urine drops, failing to complete drug treatment, and he received a new sentence of 20 months by Judge Mills and sent back to BOP. He was released from BOP in 1995, and then we have the new indictment returned by the grand jury in 1996, this time for distributing crack cocaine rather than cocaine. Judge Mills sentenced him after he pled guilty and cooperated, ultimately to 123 months in prison, and then 6 years supervised release. On July 30th, 2004, the man was released from BOP on to supervised release. And once again, he uses cocaine, he misses urine drops, he fails to abide by the drug treatment, and he undergoes a drug assessment, and it's recommended that he receive inpatient drug treatment. He fails to do that. He is given a date of June 30th, 2005 to report. He fails to report. It's with that history that Judge Mills considered the advisory range, which he stated was 18 to 14 months, the statutory max of 36 months, and then he carefully considered the factors of 3553A1 and 3583E. And he talked about how this man is a drug addict, pure and simple. He's frying his brain and everything else about him. I don't know what the cause of or the real explanation is for his recidivism. He talked about how the man was a good worker. He has an ethic. He talks about page 12 of the transcript, but even the other arrests way back when he was much younger, and then again in his early 30s, all have to do with drugs and booze. Same page, you've gotten right back on this stuff. And finally, Judge Mills said that if he wants another shot at that intensive drug treatment, I'll make that recommendation. It's with that backdrop that Judge Mills sentenced the defendant, which was, in a sense, the fourth time that this defendant had gone before Judge Mills for this type of conduct. And it was, if you will, Judge Mills' last shot at trying to basically abide by the factors of 3553A1, the nature and circumstances of the offense, this man's history, his characteristics, the need to deter him from future crime, protect the public, and this man's needs for drug treatment. So based on upon that record, Your Honors, I would state and we would contend that Judge Mills issued a proper sentence, and we would ask you to affirm him. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Gilmore. Mr. Beavers, how much time does he have? 4 minutes?
The problem with the government's argument in this case is that because, as I contend, there is only one standard of reasonableness for all federal cases, here we have a case where the defendant received a sentence more than double what the Sentencing Commission, in its wisdom, has decided people should get for exactly this kind of conduct. And
when you say exactly this kind of conduct, you don't actually offer any examples of people who have this history. He does seem to recidivate extremely rapidly after each imprisonment. And maybe everyone's like that, but you haven't presented any evidence of that.
No, Your Honor, that is true.
So why should we believe you when you say this person is just typical? Judge Mills obviously thought he was atypical.
And, well, he said that other people had less. He didn't explain. That's part of my problem with the explanation. And I think that in regular cases, this court has adopted sort of a sliding scale as you get really far. There is clearly evidence here why the court should go above. But whether it should be more than double, I think, needs perhaps even more more proof, and it may be that something 150% of the guidelines reasonable, but more than double I think is so unusual that just the brief references here as to kind of your recidivist is nowhere near the type of explanation that would make this an understandably reasonable sentence. And I think that the problem is that if this case is affirmed, that becomes the law for regular sentencing, and there is no justification, as I can see under the policy, as a policy matter, for having a different type of law when you have the same definition of reasonableness, for having different standards for what must be explained.
Counsel, declaring this sentence reasonable or not plainly unreasonable doesn't establish any particular legal standard for future sentences in these sorts of cases. It would be the opposite if we declared this sentence unreasonable, that there would be a legal benchmark. And what you're asking us to do is to say that this sentence is unreasonable. That would establish a legal benchmark, it seems to me, rather than declaring it reasonable, because saying one sentence is reasonable has no implications for the reasonableness of any other sentence. But the opposite would be true.
Except,
see where I'm driving at?
Yes, except that I'm also asking that this court just send it back to have the district court explain why it was so huge. And that's part of the problem here, is if the court adopts the standard that the same standard of review applies to both revocations and regular cases, then I think with that standard, this was an inadequate record to explain why, under a sliding scale, this extent of a departure was reasonable. There may be factors that the court could have mentioned, but I'm not aware of it in the record. That's all. Thank you.
Okay, thank you to both counsel. Court will be in recess.